Chapter 93. Private and confidential, relating to family matters. Showing how Mr. Kenwigs underwent violent agitation, and how Mrs. Kenwigs was as well as could be expected. It might have been 7 o'clock in the evening, and it was growing dark in the narrow streets near Golden Square, when Mr. Kenwigs sent out for a pair of the cheapest white kid gloves, those at 14 pence, and selecting the strongest, which happened to be the right-hand one, walked downstairs with an air of pomp and much excitement, and proceeded to muffle the knob of the street door knocker there. Having executed this task with great nicety, Mr. Kenwigs pulled the door to, after him, and just stepped across the road, to try the effect from the opposite side of the street. Satisfied that nothing could possibly look better in its way, Mr. Kenwigs then stepped back again, and calling through the keyhole to Morlina to open the door, vanished into the house, and was seen no longer. Now, considered as an abstract circumstance, there was no more obvious cause or reason why Mr. Kenwigs should take the trouble of muffling this particular knocker than there would have been for his muffling the knocker of any nobleman or gentleman resident 10 miles off, because, for the greater convenience of the numerous lodgers, the street door always stood wide open, and the knocker was never used at all. The first floor, the second floor, and the third floor had each a bell of its own. As to the attics, no one ever called on them. If anybody wanted the parlors, they were close at hand, and all he had to do was to walk straight into them, while the kitchen had a separate entrance down the area steps. As a question of mere necessity and usefulness, therefore, this muffling of the knocker was thoroughly incomprehensible. But knockers may be muffled for other purposes than those of mere utilitarianism, as, in the present instance, was clearly shown. There are certain polite forms and ceremonies which must be observed in civilized life, or mankind relapse into their original barbarism. No genteel lady was ever yet confined, indeed, no genteel confinement can possibly take place without the accompanying symbol of a muffled knocker. Mrs. Kenwigs was a lady of some pretensions to gentility. Mrs. Kenwigs was confined. And, therefore, Mr. Kenwigs tied up the silent knocker on the premises, in a white kid glove. "I'm not quite certain neither," said Mr. Kenwigs, arranging his shirt collar, and walking slowly upstairs, "whether, as it's a boy, I won't have it in the papers." Pondering upon the advisability of this step, and the sensation it was likely to create in the neighborhood, Mr. Kenwigs betook himself to the sitting room, where various extremely diminutive articles of clothing were airing on a horse before the fire, and Mr. Lumby, the doctor, was dandling the baby, that is, the old baby, not the new one. "It's a fine boy, Mr. Kenwigs," said Mr. Lumby, the doctor. "You consider him a fine boy, do you, sir?" returned Mr. Kenwigs. "It's the finest boy I ever saw in all my life," said the doctor. "I never saw such a baby." It is a pleasant thing to reflect upon, and furnishes a complete answer to those who contend for the gradual degeneration of the human species, that every baby born into the world is a finer one than the last. "I never saw such a baby," said Mr. Lumby, the doctor. "Morlina was a fine baby," remarked Mr. Kenwigs, as if this were rather an attack, by implication, upon the family. "They were all fine babies," said Mr. Lumby. And Mr. Lumby went on nursing the baby with a thoughtful look. Whether he was considering under what head he could best charge the nursing in the bill, was best known to himself. During this short conversation, Miss Morlina, as the eldest of the family, and natural representative of her mother during her indisposition, had been hustling and slapping the three younger Miss Kenwigses, without intermission, which considerate and affectionate conduct brought tears into the eyes of Mr. Kenwigs, and caused him to declare that, in understanding and behavior, that child was a woman. "She will be a treasure to the man she marries, sir," said Mr. Kenwigs, half aside. I think she'll marry above her station, Mr. Lumby. Apostrophe, I shouldn't wonder at all, apostrophe, replied the doctor. You never see her dance, sir, did you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Kenwicks. The doctor shook his head. Eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, as though he pitied him from his heart, then you don't know what she's capable of. Apostrophe, all this time there had been a great whisking in and out of the other room. The door had been opened and shut very softly about 20 times a minute, for it was necessary to keep Mrs. Kenwicks quiet, and the baby had been exhibited to a score or two of deputations from a select body of female friends, who had assembled in the passage and about the street door, to discuss the event in all its bearings. Indeed, the excitement extended itself over the whole street, and groups of ladies might be seen standing at the doors, some in the interesting condition in which Mrs. Kenwicks had last appeared in public, relating their experiences of similar occurrences. Some few acquired great credit from having prophesied, the day before yesterday, exactly when it would come to pass. Others, again, related how that they guessed what it was, directly they saw Mr. Kenwicks turn pale and run up the street as hard as ever he could go. Some said one thing, and some another, but all talked together, and all agreed upon two points. First, that it was very meritorious and highly praiseworthy in Mrs. Kenwicks to do as she had done. And secondly, that there never was such a skillful and scientific doctor as that Dr. Lumby. In the midst of this general hubbub, Dr. Lumby sat in the first floor front, as before related, nursing the deposed baby and talking to Mr. Kenwicks. He was a stout, bluff-looking gentleman, with no shirt collar to speak of, and a beard that had been growing since yesterday morning. For Dr. Lumby was popular, and the neighborhood was prolific, and there had been no less than three other knockers muffled, one after the other within the last 48 hours. Well, Mr. Kenwicks, apostrophe, said Dr. Lumby, this makes six. You'll have a fine family in time, sir. Apostrophe, I think six is almost enough, sir, apostrophe, returned Mr. Kenwicks.
Pooh, pooh,
apostrophe, said the doctor. Nonsense. Not half enough. Apostrophe, with this, the doctor laughed, but he didn't laugh half as much as a married friend of Mrs. Kenwicks, who had just come in from the sick chamber to report progress and take a small sip of brandy and water, and who seemed to consider it one of the best jokes ever launched upon society. They're not altogether dependent upon good fortune, neither, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, taking his second daughter on his knee. They have expectations. Apostrophe, oh, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Lumby, the doctor. And very good ones too, I believe, haven't they? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the married lady. Why, ma'am, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, it's not exactly for me to say what they may be, or what they may not be. It's not for me to boast of any family with which I have the honor to be connected. At the same time, Mrs. Kenwicks is, I should say, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, abruptly, and raising his voice as he spoke, that my children might come into a matter of £100 apiece, perhaps. Perhaps more, but certainly that. Apostrophe, and a very pretty little fortune, apostrophe, said the married lady. There are some relations of Mrs. Kenwicks, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, taking a pinch of snuff from the doctor's box, and then sneezing very hard, for he wasn't used to it, that might leave their £100 apiece to 10 people, and yet not go begging when they had done it. Apostrophe, ah. I know who you mean, apostrophe, observed the married lady, nodding her head. I made mention of no names, and I wish to make mention of no names, apostrophe, said Mr. Kenwicks, with a portentous look. Many of my friends have met a relation of Mrs. Kenwicks in this very room, as would do honor to any company, that's all. Apostrophe, I've met him, apostrophe, said the married lady, with a glance towards Dr. Lumby. It's naturally very gratifying to my feelings as a father to see such a man as that, a kissing and taking notice of my children, apostrophe pursued Mr. Kenwicks. It's naturally very gratifying to my feelings as a man to know that man. It will be naturally very gratifying to my feelings as a husband to make that man acquainted with this event. Apostrophe, having delivered his sentiments in this form of words, Mr. Kenwicks arranged his second daughter's flaxen tail, and bade her be a good girl and mind what her sister, Marlena, said. That girl grows more like her mother every day, apostrophe said Mr. Lumby, suddenly stricken with an enthusiastic admiration of Marlena. There, apostrophe rejoined the married lady. What I always did say. She's the very picture of her. Apostrophe having thus directed the general attention to the young lady in question, the married lady embraced the opportunity of taking another sip of the brandy and water, and a pretty long sip too. Yes, there is a likeness, apostrophe said Mr. Kenwicks, after some reflection. But such a woman as Mrs. Kenwicks was, afore she was married. Good gracious, such a woman. Apostrophe, Mr. Lumby shook his head with great solemnity, as though to imply that he supposed she must have been rather a dazzler. Talk of fairies! Apostrophe, cried Mr. Kenwicks, I never see anybody so light to be alive, never. Such manners too, so playful, and yet so sincerely proper. As for her figure, it isn't generally known, apostrophe said Mr. Kenwicks, dropping his voice. But her figure was such, at that time, that the sign of the Britannia, over in the Holloway Road, was painted from it. Apostrophe, but only see what it is now, apostrophe urged the married lady. Does she look like the mother of six? Apostrophe, quite ridiculous, apostrophe cried the doctor. She looks a deal more like her own daughter, apostrophe said the married lady. So she does, apostrophe assented Mr. Lumby. A great deal more. Apostrophe, Mr. Kenwicks was about to make some further observations, most probably in confirmation of this opinion, when another married lady, who had looked in to keep up Mrs. Kenwicks' spirits, and help to clear off anything in the eating and drinking way that might be going about, put in her head to announce that she had just been down to answer the bell, and that there was a gentleman at the door who wanted to see Mr. Kenwicks most particular. Apostrophe, shadowy visions of his distinguished relation flitted through the brain of Mr. Kenwicks as this message was delivered, and under their influence, he dispatched Marlena to show the gentleman up straightway. Why, I do declare, apostrophe said Mr. Kenwicks, standing opposite the door so as to get the earliest glimpse of the visitor as he came upstairs, it's Mr. Johnson. How do you find yourself, sir? Apostrophe, Nicholas shook hands, kissed his old pupils all round, entrusted a large parcel of toys to the guardianship of Marlena, bowed to the doctor and the married ladies, and inquired after Mrs. Kenwicks in a tone of interest, which went to the very heart and soul of the nurse, who had come in to warm some mysterious compound in a little saucepan over the fire. I ought to make 100 apologies to you for calling at such a season, apostrophe said Nicholas, but I was not aware of it until I had rung the bell, and my time is so fully occupied now that I feared it might be some days before I could possibly come again. Apostrophe, no time like the present, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Kenwicks. The situation of Mrs. Kenwicks, sir, is no obstacle to a little conversation between you and me, I hope. Apostrophe, you are very good, apostrophe said Nicholas. At this juncture, proclamation was made by another married lady that the baby had begun to eat like anything, whereupon the two married ladies, already mentioned, rushed tumultuously into the bedroom to behold him in the act. The fact is, apostrophe resumed Nicholas, that before I left the country, where I have been for some time past, I undertook to deliver a message to you. Apostrophe, a, " said Mr. Kenwicks. "And I have been," added Nicholas, "already in town for some days, without having had an opportunity of doing so." "It's no matter, sir," said Mr. Kenwicks. "I dare say it's none the worse for keeping cold. Message from the country," said Mr. Kenwicks, ruminating. "That's curious. I don't know anybody in the country." "Miss Pettiker," suggested Nicholas. "Oh, from her, is it?" Said Mr. Kenwicks. "Oh dear, yes. Ah, Mrs. Kenwicks will be glad to hear from her. Henrietta Pettiker, eh? How odd things come about now, that you should have met her in the country." "Well," hearing this mention of their old friend's name, the four Miss Kenwickses gathered round Nicholas, open-eyed and mouthed, to hear more. Mr. Kenwicks looked a little curious too, but quite comfortable and unsuspecting. "The message relates to family matters," said Nicholas, hesitating. "Oh, never mind," said Kenwicks, glancing at Mr. Lumby, who, having rashly taken charge of little Lillivick, found nobody disposed to relieve him of his precious burden. "All friends here." Nicholas hemmed once or twice, and seemed to have some difficulty in proceeding. "At Portsmouth, Henrietta Pettiker is," observed Mr. Kenwicks. "Yes," said Nicholas, "Mr. Lillivick is there." Mr. Kenwicks turned pale, but he recovered, and said, "That was an odd coincidence also." "The message is from him," said Nicholas. Mr. Kenwicks appeared to revive. He knew that his niece was in a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.